Hi, I'm John.
And I'm Ron, and this is Digital Divination on the No Direction Network.
All right, and we are back for episode 30. Is that another milestone?
It's got to be. Every factor of 10. Every factor of 5 is a milestone as far as I'm concerned. Every one. We get to 31, it's going to be a celebration of being one more than 30.
Yes, yes. Yeah. No, I was just thinking, you know, it's like, wow, 30. That kind of crept up pretty quick.
Yeah, but we've had a lot of yammering we've done, too, so... You know, that's nice. True. That's nice, I think. We can have people hear us sort of talk about the game a little bit, things that interest us a lot. And
yeah, well, hopefully it interests other people. I know we have at least a couple of listeners because I have people sending me messages about stuff related to what we've talked about. So,
oh, neat. But not what we really want, which is questions for us to discuss the next time around.
Right. Yeah. If anybody has those, that'd be great to send in. I had been like putting general questions out there in different places, and I've just been kind of too busy to go and search that out. So if anybody just wants to contact us, that would be great. So how you been? It's been a couple of weeks.
Oh, it has been really nice, actually. We've had some spectacular weather, and I've been kind of out enjoying that. Because my wife and I are both vaccinated, we're able to be a little freer with the sort of activities that we take now with the latest guidance, and that feels really good. Like we're kind of creeping into back to normal.
Well, and did I see you guys were out at Whidbey Island last weekend?
No, we didn't get quite that far. We went to Deception Pass.
Well, that's Whidbey Island.
Well, kind of, yeah, I guess technically, yes. Yeah. But we went there because it's because of the bridge, not because of the island, yeah. I guess. Let me put it that way. Yeah. Because there is a really big, really kind of fun, high walking bridge that you can go on. It's also a driving bridge where you can walk along the side. And Stephanie had been out there with some members of her family. And the kids, I believe. I think I was working, but everybody was sort of too timid to cross it, and she'd been meaning to. So she's like, I'm going to take you, Ron. I know you'll do it. You'll cross with me. And so we did, and it had a great time.
Oh, when you look down, just seeing the currents rip through is pretty wild.
Yeah, and there's actually, and this is maybe a question that you're probably the friend best poised to answer this. When you look down, you can pretty plainly see some water that's moving kind of quickly, right next to water that appears to be not moving at all. Mm-hmm. And there's no evidence from the surface that there ought to be anything different there. It's probably some sort of depth difference. But what does that mean when you got water that's flowing pretty quickly past a bunch of water that is absolutely like still as glass?
Well, it's probably, so at the center of that pass there, it's really deep. And so that's when the max current's going to be blowing through. And that's just moving a lot. And off to the sides a little bit, where it's a little bit shallower, that current, relatively speaking, it's kind of relative, right? Mm-hmm. Looks still.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So I would have thought where it was shallower might be stiller. But no, now that I think about it, it's got to move faster to get more water over a shallower area. More volume, more water through less volume.
No. You kind of had it right. What I'm saying is, it just, so off to the sides, it's shallower, and it looks like relative to the middle part, it's just not moving as fast.
Oh, but it's only a relative image. If you maybe zero in on that.
Right. It's still moving pretty quick. So if you were to like put a little boat in, like a little wooden boat or something, and watch it relative to the shore, or a stick or something, you'll see it's still moving pretty quick.
And that was, you know, we could have, too. One of the games that, you know, from Winnie the Pooh stories when we were younger, we hear about poo sticks, right? Where you throw a stick down on one side of the bridge, and each of you do it, and you watch, and whoever comes out the other side first wins. I was remarking to my wife that we could play, like, the most epic game of poo sticks ever from on top of this enormous bridge.
Well, they'd have to be really big to see them, too. So, like, you're dropping logs, you know.
You know, maybe it was a little, you know, we thought that was probably inappropriate with the people that were around there to try to haul your tree trunks and then chuck them over the side.
So did you come from the north or the south?
We came from the north. We looped around and came from the north.
Yeah. So you avoided the ferry. That's good.
We did. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So let me tell you something that somebody with a camper, you want to know this.
Okay. Okay. Yes.
So when you're coming from the north, before you get to the bridge, there's like a little lake on the right. And then there's a sign for a little campground. It's called Bowman Bay.
Wait, I think I've seen that. We passed that.
Yes, you passed that.
Okay.
Best campground ever.
Really?
If you like kayaking and doing stuff, it's got like a little beach in there.
Oh, that's sweet.
And all the campsites, there's like only 29 or so. And there's a nice big hike around. You can hike around by the bridge or hike around on the other side. So it's really great hiking. But it fills up really fast.
Yeah, I might expect. You kind of have to reserve them in advance, like a lot of the campsites.
Right. But there's also a day use area with a playground and bathrooms and stuff with a sandy beach. That's really fun to park there, have a picnic. And we brought our kayaks there and we'd kayak around. We weren't daring enough to go all by the pass, though. That's kind of scary. Right. But there's a lot of little areas you can kind of pull into and check out by boat, too.
Oh, that's neat.
But it's my favorite campground in all of the state of Washington.
And it's Bowman Bay?
It's Bowman Bay. Okay. Yeah. So, and you drove right by it. So that's why I want to point that out.
Well, I will take a look. Thank you. But this is all about what I've done. How about yourself? How have things been?
Oh, pretty good. But, you know, I kind of mentioned to you earlier in some messages that actually I had to go to the ER yesterday.
That's never good. That's not planned, right? No ER trip is planned.
No, not planned.
What happened?
Well, I kind of started running a fever Saturday night, and I was having a lot of abdominal pain on the right side, which is both where your appendix is and my new kidney is. And so once I get the temperature gets to a certain amount, they want me to call in and check things out. And so I called up 7 o'clock on Sunday morning. And they said, yeah, you should come in and do labs and get a scan in the next 4 hours. Because they didn't know what it was. I didn't know what it was. So I went in and, you know, spent 4 or 5 hours in the ER, and which wasn't bad. I had a private room and everyone was really nice to me. But it's still, like, even now, it's still kind of painful. But they didn't know what it was. But they eliminated the fact that it wasn't appendicitis and wasn't rejection of my kidney, which was good.
Good, yeah.
I think it's my disease. I have a polycystic kidney disease. So I have all these cysts on my native kidneys. And I think one of those cysts popped. That's kind of does this sort of thing to me. But I didn't feel like the previous ones that did that. Basically, I get a fever and then a bunch of other side effects. Because this one was a little bit different position than the previous ones. But now today, it feels that way. So basically, I just feel like really... I feel like really feverish, and so I'm tired and worn out and everything, but some Tylenol knocks down the fever and takes the edge off the pain. So the labs all look good. I mean, actually my kidney function is the best that it's been. So it must be something else, which I can live with.
Oh, oof.
Yeah, I was kind of a little worried. I know this is like today literally is the 11th month since my transplant.
And once you get to a year, you're in the clear, or what's the? Yeah, I mean, you're never in the clear, right? Because it's always something that is not part of your body.
Right, but once you get past a year, usually they have things dialed in is pretty well, so that the likelihood of losing the kidney prematurely drops down dramatically.
Good.
So I try to be extra careful with things, and anyway, I felt kind of weird going in there because. You know, I don't have any real obvious big injuries, and you know, running a low temperature for most people is not a big deal. But for me, any sign of infection that's not obvious, which is a high temperature, is a concern.
Cause for concern. So, yep, I believe it.
Yeah, but I'm doing better, and we're recording our 30th episode.
Great. Whoo!
So, you know, I was trying to figure out a topic, and I've been. I'm looking to start up a new AP here. I think we're going to start it the next month or so. And I have on the opposite Wednesdays of ours, I play another Wednesday group. And that one, we're going to start Fly Free or Die.
Okay.
And we were picking positions, and I kind of let everybody pick whatever they want. And then, of course, you know, we need a captain. We need an envoy. And so I stepped up to take on the envoy position.
So you're going to be the captain of the Serenity, basically, for the...
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And, you know, kind of hand in hand with this, I also had played a pretty high level envoy in a society game. I have a level 12 envoy that I played for society a couple of weeks ago. And I discovered a couple of neat new things when I leveled up to, because I hadn't played them in 3 years. So leveled up to see what I could do. And one of those things was that dealt with intimidation. So I thought, well, we can talk about intimidation and demoralize now and some of the nuances, I guess, associated with that.
Okay. Well, and I think that this is something that it's been my experience. A lot of people discover as part of the game. I feel like there are things that are kind of obvious on the page for playing the game. You're like, oh, I'm going to use my gun and I'm going to shoot at people. Pew, pew, pew. It's kind of obvious. Or, you know, I've given these list of spells, I'm going to cast these spells. But I think that the way skills interact is not something that is as immediately obvious that it can be so, so useful in a lot of fights. And I feel like one of the first discoveries tables make, somebody's going to realize, wait a minute, I can intimidate most, I can use intimidate to demoralize specifically, most enemies most of the time, and it doesn't take any spells, doesn't take any special equipment, and I give all my friends a little bit of a boost because I'm debuffing the enemy. I kind of help everybody by taking my action to do that. And so maybe it's not your go-to all the time, but people kind of learn really early on. They're like, oh, this is a useful thing.
Right. And, you know, I was, and that's for this particular character, we were playing, there's a 11 to 14 that's out. It's the first really high level scenario for society play, Starfinder society play. And I was actually playing a group with Kate Baker, Dennis Muldoon, a couple other people. They're all in the San Francisco Bay Area.
Experts by then.
Yes, yes. And they, you know, all these high-level characters. And we had a couple Solarians and a operative and a mechanic. And so I'm thinking, okay, well, I'll bring my envoy because, you know, we need somebody. And they had a mystic. Dennis was playing a mystic. So, you know, I had to bring out somebody to round things out. And I'm glad because that was, you know, we were kind of a relatively low-level group. We were on the... I was all 11s, and me is a level 12. And it was tough. It was tough sledding the whole time. So if I hadn't had my envoy, it would have been really rough. And that's interesting, because I actually had GM'd it before, and we were just barely low tier with our group. It was 12.4 low tier, and the group had no problem with it. So it was kind of an interesting perspective. But one of the things is I was leveling up. You know, there's traditional things that, you know, I do with my envoys. One of them is, you know, they have inspiring boost and they have get them and improve get them.
Yeah, okay. Yep.
Yeah. And then I, you know, this one hadn't been built for intimidation early on, but later on I actually built it as a clever feint build. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Yep. Yep.
Okay. And that turned out with high level operatives, clever feint is pretty much not very useful. Because the operative is going to take care of that part all the time. And anyway, so I switched over as I got to higher level to doing more demoralize. And one of the things that I picked up, which was new for me because I hadn't seen it anywhere else, there are two feats that I picked up which are really, really cool. I happen to be playing a Lashunta, and Lashuntas have limited telepathy.
Right.
There is a feat called Psychic Scream. Have you seen that?
I have not. It is not a base feat, not a core rulebook feat.
Correct. It's a relatively new one. I actually don't know where that is from. I should check that out. But anyway, what it allows you to do is to demoralize everyone within the range of your telepathy.
Oh, all at once, sort of a group demoralize.
Right. Right, so you can do a group demoralize. That's actually a kind of an envoy action. Now, it's harder to do, I think, than the envoys group demoralize, because the way the envoys group demoralize works is it goes against the highest CR creature. That's what the DC is based on.
Mm-hmm.
But for a psychic scream, it's based on the number of creatures.
Oh, so it's at the highest, and then you add more based on the number of creatures?
Yes. So,
Can you exclude your friends?
I presume that is, yes.
Okay.
I actually don't know that it says that. So it's telepathic scream. I apologize that. So basically, so you have to have, it's a little bit higher level. You have to have limited telepathy or telepathy, at least three ranks of intimidate. And you can broadcast, it says you can broadcast a jarring telepathic screech into the minds of nearby enemies.
So you can't
do it to your friends.
Well, I mean, unless you decide at the last minute that you weren't my friend after all. Anyway, okay, yes. Yeah. So it's useful in combat in a way that some of the effects that just hit everybody around you are maybe less useful.
Right. Anyway, so if you succeed at an intimidate check, it's 15, DC 15 plus one per target plus 1.5 times the CR of the highest target.
Ah.
So it's similar to the group one, except every time you add one, it makes the DC go up a little bit. And same thing, if you exceed the DC by five or more, it increases the number of rounds that it works.
Oh, that's actually a difference from the envoy ability.
Oh, you're right.
The envoy ability only lasts one round when you get multiple people.
Right.
No matter how high you roll. So.
Mm-hmm. Now, and so with this one, is compared to demoralize. So demoralize, you can do actually like every round, right?
Right.
There's no, there's nothing, there's no 24-hour rest period between them. Whereas the telepathic scream, you only can try it once every 24 hours. Well, so you got to get it. Otherwise, you're out.
Well, but that's not bad at all. And there, I mean, in play, what you do is you open up with your ability that gives the intimidation to a lot of people, whether that's your envoy talent or the psychic scream, in order to demoralize a whole bunch of people, let your friends that are shooting their weapons or whatever kind of go nuts, have your enemies kind of fail against you. And after the first round, everybody's got a good sense of, okay, who are we kind of adjusting our tactics to focus on? Who are we going to target? Mm-hmm. And then you just intimidate that one person until they're dropped, and then the tactics kind of flow to move on to somebody else. So not being able to use those abilities multiple times in a single fight doesn't seem that big of an impediment to me, especially because you just get to use it immediately in the next fight because you're fighting all new people.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, but I like that. And so I took that, I saw that, I thought, wow, that's really cool. And this is, it comes out of, looks like it came out of the character operations manual. And so the thing is the Lashunta, your limited telepathy is only 30 feet. So you can also get increased range with another feet.
Mm-hmm. I think there's equipment that does that too, I want to say.
Oh yeah, I hadn't thought about that. Oh. As an envoy, especially, you know, I started as Clever Feint and was moving to this demoralized thing. I really didn't have a lot of need to do anything really special with the feats. So I started thinking, oh, I'm going to do more demoralizing kind of feats and things. And so I was pretty excited about this telepathic scream, because in the past I'd used, I have another envoy, a lower level one. You know, I'd used the straight demoralize and also dispiriting taunt.
Okay.
It's an envoy improvisation.
Yeah, and that's the one that uses intimidate, but isn't technically demoralizing them. Is that right?
Right. So the thing with that is it doesn't give you you can't like extend the duration of it.
Okay.
Right. Things that normally extend the duration doesn't extend it. But the neat thing about it is there's a next level of that, which is a quick dispiriting taunt.
Mm-hmm.
So you can do it as a move action.
Oh, that's nice.
Right. And so that's what I found myself doing. And I think both of those, I'd have to double check. I think both of those doesn't have a cooldown on them.
24 hour.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm looking that up now just to confirm. So with the dispiriting taunt, so it's a standard action, goes for 60 feet. Yeah, so this is an emotion and fear effect. And the neat thing about that one is at sixth level, you can spend a resolve to turn a failure into a success.
Oh, that is right. Nice.
Yeah, so that's a neat thing. And then the quick dispiriting taunt to be able to do that is a move action instead. That's what I found to be really useful, because then I could do one of the standard action things to do a group. And then if there weren't some that weren't affected, I could do quick, or I could do a quick and demoralize, you know, all in one round. So I basically could work on two people in a round.
And try to pair up against them. That makes some sense.
Yeah.
I think Lashunta is a great choice for that as well. I would have thought when you were trying to think, well, let's be somebody who's scary and is all about demoralizing. Obviously, we've got Raz in our game, the little Skittermander, who is the scary one. But it seems to me that half-orc, somebody that gets a racial bonus to intimidate is a good way to go. And my initial thought was half-orc. I'm more familiar with what's in the core rulebook. I'm sure right. There are plenty of other races out there that give you a bonus to intimidate. But Lashunta's, they have some flexible skill bonus. Is that right? You could be...
Mm-hmm,
so you could actually build a Lashunta that's pretty scary as well as pretty diplomatic, or if you were going to be the fainter, as you mentioned, probably bluff almost certainly is one of the choices you'd make.
Right. So. And that's what I took originally, was bluff and diplomacy. So my intimidate skill isn't as good. I don't have the extra +2 modifier. Mm-hmm. You can get 2 +2 modifiers to any skill you want, racial bonus. So I don't have the extra +2 there. So as I'm thinking about my new character for Fly Free or Die, I'm thinking I'm going to build it. Originally, I was going to make an Astrozoan, because I just thought that would be a lot of fun to have an envoy Astrozoan. Basically, it's a shapeshifter.
Right.
You know, so you can disguise yourself and
You're talking blob, basically. I mean, you're not a blob when you're talking. You're probably going to take some other form, but.
Right. So that's what I thought. But now I'm thinking, you know, I'll probably go the Shunta or some other thing with telepathy, because I really like the psychic scream. Now, on top of this, so I was playing in another game with my envoy, and just so happened, it was one of the games that was testing a prototype starship weapons. So it was a scenario that did this. And because right now in society play, everything from the Starship Operations Manual isn't available.
Right.
So this was kind of testing a couple of things. Well, one of the things that you could get was an imposing ramming prow.
Okay. What does this do?
Well, so this is an intimidating weapon. And basically it allows, so normally in Starship combat, in your role as a captain, you get one opportunity to attempt to taunt or intimidate your one position on the enemy ship. Right.
Okay, right. That's it. And after that, they're like, oh, no, we've got your number. You can't do it anymore to us. Okay.
So an intimidating weapon means that after you hit another starship with this, you ram somebody with your prow, your captain can perform the taunt action once again in combat.
Oh, it refreshes it for you.
Yes.
I can see how that could actually be really helpful.
Yes. And so I find that to be pretty exciting. And you can also choose two phases of combat to affect using the taunt.
Oh.
Or take a +2 circumstance bonus to an intimidate check to taunt it. So it gives you, again, the imposing weapon gives you a bit more to do as a captain with the enemy ship. Otherwise, it's just, which makes a lot of sense, right? You just ram these guys, you know?
But that only helps you taunt. Does it help you? Because one of the things a captain can do to eke out a little more benefit from their crew is to use intimidate rather than diplomacy on your ally, on your friends that are piloting stuff. The intimidating, I assume, doesn't let you also make a second demand of your friends.
No, it doesn't. Yeah, because your friends aren't scared of you
because you ram the enemy. Stuff.
So I thought that was kind of cool. And then there's I think there's a similar fusion for normal combat weapons.
Is that menacing? No.
Is it menacing? I need to look that up. But basically, I think Joe Costi has that. Has something that start that allow him to do that. So the Vesk Bombard soldier in our game. So I think certain. Oh, maybe it's only with blast weapons or something. Let me look really quick. Anyway, so I was just thinking, how could I build multiple ways to be scary on a new character, you know?
Right. And one that lets you really focus on your intimidation skill, right? The more use you can get out of a single skill, the better. Perception being the one that everybody gets an awful lot of use out of. But if you can make intimidate a skill you get a lot of use out of in a couple of different ways, whether you're going to be using it for dispiriting taunt or demoralizing, bullying people, right? Try to get information when you interrogate folks, then that's all the better. I will say there's a little bit of a disconnect, switching game gears entirely. I've been playing more of the Pathfinder Adventure card game. We used to play that a lot and then we didn't. And now we're kind of playing more of it again. But they don't have as big or robust a skill list. And so when you put on some really scary, spiky armor, it gives you a bonus to your diplomacy checks because they don't intimidate. So diplomacy also means scaring people or lying to them or anything that is sort of a social interaction type skill. That left me feeling a little bit flat. I'm like, I really feel like there ought to be I've certainly gotten used to a difference between it is a different kind of check to try to cajole somebody versus to try to scare them versus to try to lie to them. But I think a positive social interaction and a negative social interaction kind of demand different skills, if only because conceptually those two characters work very differently. Sort of the smooth talking sort of diplomat versus the big imposing scary, or in Dawn of Flame game, a small, imposing, scary figure. They feel like very different kind of character archetypes. So I think that focusing on that not only has a mechanical benefit, which what I'm getting around to saying, is that it also has kind of a role-playing benefit to the way you present and project your character.
So that's kind of what I've been thinking about a little bit. I thought there was another intimidate you could do with like a blast weapon or something. Oh, maybe it's a shock and awe soldier I'm thinking about.
And that starts to get a little bit dangerous because you want to make sure that your DCs stay good and high. So trying to get too broad, right? Well, I want to be a envoy with their neat intimidation, with their neat intimidate tricks, and I want to be a soldier with a shock and awe and get some of their neat intimidate tricks. I mean, there's some places where multi-classing isn't your friend. And I think that this is probably one of them.
Right. Oh yeah. And for, that's the thing for soldiers, man, they have such a limited number of skill points that you kind of really have to pick and choose just one thing to be really good at. And cause you just don't have that many to go around. And usually you spend some on athletics for sure. And then it's like, what am I going to do with the other two or three?
Yeah. Well, and then envoys in particular, I mean, certainly operatives now playing Scooch. I always have an embarrassingly high number of skill ranks to put into stuff. But even when I was playing an envoy in our Dead Sons game, I thought that I really felt like I had a lot of skill points to go around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's what I find with my envoys is that I can be good at bluffing, I can be good at diplomacy, I can be good at intimidation, I can be good at culture, mm-hmm. You know, all the typical things you might consider with an envoy. And then you still have points to put in a couple other things. And I think the issue with an envoy more is the attribute spread, right? Where are you going to put those?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Because the more things, you know, you can be good at, the higher ability scores you want to be to support all those. You're like, well, no, I'm going to be great with all the charisma stuff. I want to be good with dexterity stuff too. And you know, there's a couple of these intelligence-based things I also want to be good at. And then before long, you've got sort of your multi-attribute dependent character.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's one of the downsides with the Salarians in general. But what I find with the Envoy, I mean, charisma is important. And then, you know, dexterity and int, those are kind of equally valuable for an envoy, depending on if you want to do more int-based stuff or more dexterity-based stuff, you know, the whatever build you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. So
like my Clever Feint, I had to really load up on dexterity, but my other envoys that didn't do that, I didn't worry so much about dexterity. I basically don't shoot at things at all. I do other, you know, other things that the envoy can do, which are a bit more useful.
Well, see, and that's why, see, the envoy that I played, I did, and I focused on, I mean, not only did I focus on dexterity, but I invested in getting long arm proficiency and then some of the other better weapons, especially as I got higher level and some of my neat tricks I could do as a move action that still mm-hmm. gave me the ability to take a standard action and shoot and feel like I was sort of helping contribute to the fight mm-hmm. as far as wearing down enemy hit points, not just providing sort of the buffs or debuffs for helping my friends or hurting my enemies.
So it makes it pretty substantial.
Yeah, it's a pretty big deal. I do think that one of the things that's kind of fun about Intimidate is if you're in a combat where you're making shots over and over, eventually you're going to kind of figure out what the enemy's armor class is. Right. You can't not, right? Well, you pay attention to what hits, you pay attention to what misses, you're going to eventually learn the armor class. If you're doing a lot of the social interactions like demoralizing that are based upon your enemy's level, you can kind of, your enemy's CR, you can kind of pretty quickly zero in on what that is. And so you can be like, oh, well, this is somebody that we're really going to need to put more resources into because the CR is higher than we are in level, or, oh, you know, this is something we should probably be able to mop up pretty quickly, guys, because I rolled pretty bad and I still succeeded. So,
yeah, no, in this, the scenario we were playing, the CR, some of the bosses was like 5 to 6 higher than us.
Oh boy.
which seemed really high. I thought that was not supposed to be. So,
there are encounter design rules, people.
Yeah, that's what some people were saying.
Oh,
why is it so hard? It's so hard. Yeah, and it was long. Oh man, it was. We started like at 6:30 and ended after midnight. It was over 6 hours.
Oh wow.
Yeah, it's I hadn't expected that because when I ran it, my crew, which was very, you know, my local group here, they're really synergized a lot, and they blew through it in 4.5 hours. You know, it was
so just
it
kind of wasn't power through, and they're the ones you said that were playing. They were just on the cusp and ended up playing down, right?
Right. So, yeah, and the thing is, they have a couple really big damage dealers that are like super sharpshooter soldier that was firing off with Soldier's Onslaught, mm-hmm. and that's like every round, and she would hit like every round, right?
Oh, wow.
That's 150 damage every round.
Wow.
You know, just tearing things apart. And versus the other group, we had, you know, the two damage dealers with the Solarians, and they just weren't doing that much output, relative speaking. Right. So, yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. Anyway, so that's kind of what I thought the topic would be for today. You have anything else? Anything else come up that interesting that you care to chat about?
No, there are a couple of things that I can't really chat about. So let me speak only very obliquely. I had some of the Starfinder developers come back around because they're in Dead Sons number 5. There's a back matter article that I happened to write for that presents several different like new alien races and their new homeworlds and some new equipment. And there was a sudden kerfluffle this week where I had a couple of different developers all like, oh, hey, Ron, I know you wrote for number 5. Did you write this particular race? And somebody else asked me the same question 5 minutes later. And so I'm like, no, I actually wrote one of the other ones that I think is more interesting. Why do you care about something that I didn't write? Why aren't you asking me about what I did write? Come on, everybody. So anyway, so I encourage people to take a look, because everybody ought to, at the sort of the Hydra people that I made with multiple heads, redundant organs. So they're philosophically, they're all about redundancies, right? They want to have all their systems and all their thinking be contingencies and layers upon layers. That way you can't be taken by surprise. I'd frankly even forgotten that I wrote them. But when this question came up about something else in the article that wasn't even me, I'm like, oh, I'm taking another look here because this is cool and I'm proud of it, even though nobody else seems to care.
Yeah, you know, that's interesting. I was going to ask you, you know, about the back matter on these. Is that, do they get used to expand the universe later on, or is it just, here's some stuff that you can use if you want to go do your own homebrew with them? I mean, well, what's the vision for those?
Both, I think. I think the initial thought is they're just going to put a lot of things out there, and then and people can pick up in their home game, they can pick up any of them. But if we need to pick something up later, we can absolutely go back and look at that. And I've done that. I needed to look at some interesting technology. And so in the back of one of the Devastation Arc volumes, there's a whole thing about sort of high-level advanced Civ technology. I'm like, oh, I'm going to take a look at that. I recently was writing something else, and I had to look into a back matter article that was all about one of the deities that went into some very, very specific information about one of the deities. I'm like, oh, well, there's a lot of really cool stuff here that I can then use to build this other thing that I'm writing that's going to be published and carry that forward. So I don't think that very much of it is published with the intent to say, ah, we have now put this here and we're putting a marker on it, knowing we're going to cash in this marker in 18 months' time when we do this other thing. I don't think that happens hardly ever, but the fact that it's there means it's easier and easier to do world building when we try to pull some of that stuff up later.
Yeah, is it interesting you mentioned that? When I was working on the Starship Operations Manual, I actually used some of the back matter from Against the Aeon Throne dealing with the stewards.
Oh, yeah. I'd forgotten that. Yeah. When I think back matter of Against the Aeon Throne, I'm like, oh, you must mean all the Aslanti stuff. But no, there was a whole stewards thing back there, too, I now remember.
Right. Yeah, and it actually got me thinking again that I really wish we had a stewards based kind of AP. I think that'd be a lot of fun.
Well, I think that certainly I think would go off better than the Pathfinder's Agents of Edgewatch. So there's only certain kinds of adventures where you can basically play the cops and and have it work. And I think space cops tends to work way better than fantasy cops bordering on advanced real world cops. Yeah, there was some unease about that in the community that was not at all surprising. I think the advantage of a steward story is that you've got kind of built in threats that they have to face, a built in sort of hierarchy that you can advance in. I think that could work really well.
Yeah. Anyway, I've kind of mentioned that a couple times. I'm hoping that, when it gets around to doing that, they remember me about that. I don't know.
We'll see. I know. I know more than other people do about what's coming in the different sort of adventures that we're doing. So I won't talk a lot more. But I know of no steward based adventures. That's still up in the potential future.
All right. Excellent. Well, it's been great chatting with you again.
Oh, you as well.
All right. I'm John.
And I'm Ron, and this is Digital Divination.